Blog Talk Radio.
Well, welcome to Empower You Radio. I hope everyone has had an absolutely amazing week this week. It is such an honor to have each and every one of our listeners come on and listen to the show. And so today is no different. I am super excited about our guest this evening. And so I just want to go over a couple of things before we get started and before I bring her on. First of all, although you can listen via telephone, we do not take questions over the phone. Due to the nature of the show, we choose to keep each and every one of our guests and listeners safe from any kind of person that would try to call in and say something that's inappropriate. And so that is one of the biggest things. Also, for those of you that don't know me, I am your host. My name is Kelly Alsobrook, also known as the Voice for the Voiceless. I am a warrior on a mission to create awareness about human trafficking and to help women reclaim their lives and their self-esteem. I am an advocate and survivor of human trafficking, domestic violence, and sexual assault. And I created this show as a platform for survivors to share their stories, to share their messages of hope, but also to educate those that are not, that don't really know what human trafficking is and who it affects. It affects everybody. It doesn't matter your ethnicity. It doesn't matter how much money you have or you don't have. Human trafficking affects everyone. And so this is why I've created this platform, because there is no platform really for human trafficking survivors to share their stories and to share their messages of hope. So with that, I am going to introduce my incredible guest for this evening. Her name is Elizabeth Ciccantelli, and I hope I said that right. She is a licensed practical nurse, a self-taught amateur artist, hobbyist, inspirer, and a 43-year survivor and thriver of child molestation, child exploitation, and human trafficking. After several years of soul-searching and misguided advice, Liz reached out to receive professional and ethical help, assist her in a self-transformation of which continues to this day. She answers the invitation to share some of her story with us and offering a heart full of joy, gratitude, and love. She speaks about the unfolding of the many diversified events that led to her entering into the horrifying subculture of human trafficking, the people who rescued her, and the wreckage left behind that has helped to mold her into the person she is today. And I have to say that I recently met Liz through Periscope, of all places. And I have to tell you that as I've gotten to learn who she is and as I've gotten to know her, she is an incredible woman. She has such an awesome sense of humor. She is very talented. I don't know how she can say that she is an amateur artist, because her art is absolutely amazing. Absolutely amazing. And so without further ado, I would love to introduce Liz. Hey, Liz, how are you tonight?
Hi, Kelly. Thank you so much. You are certainly in the right place right now. You made me feel so good there about the art.
Your art is amazing. But you need to share that with the world.
Well, it's in the process, So, okay, you said just about everything that I would have said. And there's a couple things that I wanted to start off saying, I had to ask myself, what do I want to accomplish by doing this? And aside from the mutual accomplishment that we both would like to see, it, to spread the word about human trafficking and let people know what it is, let them be able to recognize it when they see it. There are also some personal goals of mine that I would like to see happen, which would just be majorly just to attempt to have people see my story without bias or judgment, but with insight and fairness to all sides of my story, not just me, because predominantly that has what has helped me to heal now for the past 25 years. The first 31 years after the death of my mother were spent pretty much aimlessly wandering through life, looking for a place where I could be myself and feel comfortable, looking for safety, for understanding, but not just for me to be understood, but for me to understand others and the world. And if you ask me, I honestly believe that's what we all want. And if it's not what we all want, I think we should want it, because I know in my heart that that's what this world needs right now. So the other thing I'd like to accomplish is to clear up some of the confusion people may have as far as how I was trafficked. And because there are some innocent people who have been very wrongly accused of taking due to the various twists and turns in my life since the death of my mother. So I'm going to start at the beginning. I'm going to try to fit everything in so that it's helpful for people to be able to, you know, have some insight. But it's I know I'm not going to do it, but I'm going to try in an hour. So I'm going to start in the beginning that, you know, like you said in the intro, I was born in Pennsylvania, and I was born to two college-educated people. My real mother was a medical assistant, and my father was a school teacher. My dad grew up in the Depression. He went through two wars. He fought in the Second World War, and he fought in the Korean War. And when he got out of the war, he met my mother, and he fell deeply in love with her. She was the love of her life, his life. They were the love of each other's life. And, you know, they proceeded to do what most other people were doing, have kids, buy a house, settle down. And one Sunday morning, my father took my brothers to church, and it has been said that my mother was very upset because he used to drop them off at church and he wouldn't stay for the mass. And she got very angry with him. And so that particular Sunday, he left to take my brothers to mass, and he stayed there. And when he came home, she was lying on a gurney with a sheet over her head in the driveway. So, needless to say, after, you know, the PTSD of two wars, growing up in the Depression, and then having this happen, you know, everything, it seemed to him that all of that stuff prior had been worth it, you know, to have the children that he loved and the woman that he loved and the house and, you know, he had the perfect life. And then for that to happen was a great, horrible, horrible tragedy for him. So he began to have a lot of symptoms of his PTSD that he had not had previously. And so our lives became pretty much a nightmare. About 2 months after my mother died. Now, I didn't remember this until I was about 35 years old. I repressed it. there was a little, there was a teacher in the school, a Catholic school that I went to, used to let me and my younger sister come because my father had no one to watch us when he went to work. So we used to go to the school, and the nuns would give us little coloring books and stuff like that, and we would color and, you know, spend our days there in the beginning when she died. And there was this particular teacher that, I don't know why, but when I remember this story, I remember her like that. Is there something in my head that I think she liked my father? You know, like I can remember being a little kid and actually being afraid, like, you know, somebody took my mom and now you're going to take my dad, you know. So I kicked her. She came up to me one day and she was trying to be really nice. And I just kicked her. I acted out. I was 4 years old. I just lost my mother. So that day when I went home, my father lost it. He lost it. And if you can imagine a four-year-old, you know, baby, practically, who just lost their mother, has no idea what death is, is wondering where, you know, what are people talking about? She's in heaven. There's this undisclosed place that everybody knows about, but I don't know. I know nothing about it. I don't know what they're talking about. I don't know why they're crying. I don't know why. I don't know why my father's mad at me. I don't even know if I remembered kicking her at that point. Anyway, when I came home, he beat me so bad. He beat me so bad. And he slammed the door. And before he slammed the door, while I was crying in my pillow with welts on my legs, he said, don't you ever bring up your mother again, because I was crying. I want my mommy. I want my mommy. And he slammed the door and he said, your mommy's dead and she's not coming back. But he screamed it, you know, with that rage, that PTSD rage. And that really damaged me. It damaged me. I mean, I remained that four-year-old kid at my core until I was 35 years old. And I finally, you know, was in therapy, and I remembered it. And the way I remembered it was that I woke up one night after a long period of time. This went on for maybe months. I had been in nursing school, and I was a nurse when I started therapy. And I told myself, you know, I knew I always had a feeling that there was something missing that would put all these pieces together for me. Because when I came out of human trafficking, had something similar to a nervous breakdown. And I kept asking myself questions. Why am I like this? Why am I not like everybody else? Why do I always feel so misplaced? Why do I lead myself into these situations? All these questions were in my head. I wanted to heal myself. I wanted to be whole. I felt fractured. And so while I was in therapy, I began to, before I went to sleep, I had read, and this is a pretty crazy thing, I had read, you know, your subconscious mind does not give you anything that you can't handle. That took away a lot of fear from me, and I began to have, you know, a lot of faith, you know, that everything was going to be all right. And I also was praying at that time. Since then, I now meditate instead of praying. But so I would go to sleep every night. So this went on for a few months. And I prayed to God. And I asked him, if there is something there is something that I am not facing, I'm not remembering. Show it to me, please. Show it to me. And lo and behold, one morning, it was after a therapy session, because we always talked about the meetings that I got when I was younger, I woke up crying. It was so real. And I have to tell this to people, for anyone who thinks they may be suffering in the same way, all right? I have to tell you, when I say a weight was lifted that morning, it was incredible. Yes, I was crying. Yes, tears were streaming down my face for a couple hours afterwards until I called the therapist and I said, I have to come in. I have to come in. But it was so crystal clear, this memory. And today I can't believe that I buried that for that long. And what it did to my life by burying it, by not having people around to help me process it. So, you know, we talk about human trafficking, and I'm going to get into my personal experience, that, you know, with it specifically, but there's a lot more to it than just bad men out there trying to snatch up women to sell them. There's more to it than that. And so that's, you know, that's something that I would like people to take into consideration when they're listening to this. Now, that was not the only thing. What I truly believe that repressing that memory was connected to so much, because when after I remembered that, so many things fell in place for me. There were so many reasons I understood myself, you know. That's why I was out there looking for somebody to understand me. I was like this four-year-old little girl out in the world, you know, even when I was 13, 14, 15, 16, you know, looking for someone, somebody, you know. And after that, my father did remarried a wonderful woman. My stepmother, God rest her soul, she was the most beautiful person. We all loved her. And life was not peachy king. It wasn't, because he went on with the beating. You know, she would be at work. She worked long hours. She was a pharmacist. And the beatings continued. I began to run away. I got involved in drugs at an early age. I was the classic. My story is the classic, you know, domestic violence story. And then I got pregnant. I got pregnant. But before I got pregnant, I was shot. I was shot hanging out with kids. It was an accident. It was another kid in the neighborhood who was not unintentional, was just I happened to be there. And shortly after that, I got pregnant. And I got pregnant from a guy that I had been dating for a few months. And my father, nobody knew until I was about 5 months pregnant. And my father, you know, sent me to a Catholic, like, convent-type situation that they had back then in 1972. And I'm very happy with the way that turned out, because I was way too young and way too lost. And my father was lost. And he was also very heartbroken over that. So after that happened, of course, I began to do drugs too. You know, deal with that, because it was a trauma on top of other traumas. And I wound up, let me see what happened after that. I stayed in high school. I got to my junior year and I dropped out of high school. And I started to run away some more. And on the last particular time that I ran away, I remember the judge saying, Mr. Ticantelli, if I see you in here, because I guess, you know, people talk through the grapevine, and word got around, I'm sure, that he was one of the parents who beat their kids. Everybody on the block beat their kids, you know. But the judge, this particular judge, said to him, if I see you in here one more time with her, I'm going to put you in jail. She's not going to go to the detention center. She's going to go to a foster home. And so that, you know, scared me in a couple different ways, because it scared me in one way that my father would be put in jail, because on top of the pain that was inflicted due to his, you know, it was none of his making, except for the fact that he didn't go to the VA. And he went a couple times, and I can remember him coming home and saying, I can handle my pain, but I can't handle theirs. And he cried that night. But, you know, I didn't want to see him go to jail. You know, people tell you had Stockholm Syndrome. You had, you know, it was, you know, some, you know, your thinking was wrong. But that's the truth of the matter, is just that I've always been a very empathetic person and a compassionate person. And I'm grateful that I'm that way. And so I ran away for good. And I worked in Center City, Philadelphia, in a pizzeria, which I had worked for quite a long time. I worked for this particular family who's pretty well known as, you know, they have a label. You know, society's put a label on all of them, you know, as mobsters. They're the mafia. They're bad people, okay? It's true that I did meet the first pimp in a pizzeria, because you have customers coming in, you know, all kinds of people. This was on 13th and Market Street. You get all kinds of people there. He came in and he began to groom. You know, he groomed me for a few months. And he wound up, he prostituted me. I was about 16 at that time. And he would, like, go off, you know, like, and then come back to my apartment, because I had an apartment even though I was 16. I did have an apartment I shared with a girlfriend of mine in Camden, New Jersey, which is another hot spot for that kind of thing. And he would come back and then want me to, you know, want to prostitute me again. He had his own house. He lived at his own house with his mother. You know, he had a whole set of problems, you know. I can't even remember even knowing him that well. The whole thing with him lasted about 6 months. And so eventually there was another pimp in my building that I lived in Camden. And he began to talk to me. And, you know, we talked about this before, you know, that's something you don't do. Well, I didn't know, you know. I thought, well, I didn't even really know he was a pimp in the beginning. I mean, that's how young and stupid I was. So he started talking to me, and one day he invited me in his apartment, me and my girlfriend, and he called me Bet. Bet. He said, Bet, do you know what white slave for you? I said, no. What? I don't know. What's that? I didn't know. How was from white suburbia? You know, I didn't know. He said, he took my hand like a father would take a daughter's hand. He said, come here, I want to show you something. He had a photo album It was big. It was big. Pictures of him and all of these white women. And I said, oh, I didn't ask any questions. And he said, these are people who were once in my family. But they all leave. He played the, you know, the sad martyr role, like my father used to do sometimes. And I felt sorry for him, you know. Then he told me how poor he was growing up and how difficult it was. His father was a preacher, and he told me about the pimp god that looks over all the pimps. And I said, so you're a pimp? Like, and I'm just catching on, you know, this is how I was. Yeah, I'm a pimp. Oh. So from there, he started to prostitute me out, actually would just tell us to go out. And there were two other women. One of the women that he was with, he had been with for a long time. And I'm sure that she probably went through a lot because I never saw him beat anyone. I never saw him beat anyone. But I did one time see her with a black eye. And I was only with him for about 8 months, And during that time, I can't really say, like, my story is not like yours in that I can say that he, him particularly, was, you know, like a really evil person. You know, like I'm imagining some of those people that you were with, Kelly. The person before him did beat, you know, and tried to kidnap me for one day from the street. You know, that's why when you say nobody gets kidnapped from this guy, I'm walking down the street, this car pulls up, he pulls me in, I'm fighting, kicking like crazy, and I was a strong kid. I was strong. Kicking like crazy. I get away, right? Somehow I do get away. I run for the apartment building because my apartment building was right there. Ran for the apartment building. He starts beating me right in front of the elevator, right? I had pushed the button, and after I pushed the button, he grabbed me and threw me down and started beating the shit out of me. Well, I guess he got afraid that somebody was going to come, and he left. And I probably was unconscious for a couple minutes there, but when I went back and my sister saw me, and the people that I was working for in the pizzeria, they sent me. They bought a plane ticket for me and sent me to a friend of mine who I went to visit in Indiana. And, of course, I went back, you know, because that's the mindset that you're in. Nobody really cares about me here. I'm just going to go, you know, and this is the mindset of the person being trafficked, you know. I'm just going to go where, you know, at least I know that person. Well, I might die, but at least I'll have a roof over my head and I'll be wanted. Even if it's wanted for something that is not really good for me, you know. So, but this second guy, he was, you know, he was either very, very sneaky and shady, or he had, you know, I'd like to think that he did have a very difficult childhood, and he was one of those kids that felt, you know, like me, like I felt, like there was no place where I belonged. There was nobody where I could just be myself, you know, and of course, he probably was very tired of hearing his father preach, too, because he brought that story up a lot. He used to always say, talk about that story. You know, my dad used to say, the Lord will provide, the Lord will provide. Well, the Lord never provided. That's what he used to say all the time. And I didn't think anything of that. I felt sorry for him because he thought that, you know. Because I did have a very, that's something that is very strong in me, is faith. So, but after him, that all ended with him because he used to take his girls, whatever you call them, he used to take us out of state and on these trips. And on this one particular trip, we stopped in Georgia, we stopped in South Carolina, we stopped in Florida, and he had us go out on the street each time. And when we stopped in Florida, in St. Petersburg, this took me a long time to put the memory together. So when we stopped there, the girl, he had this one girl. She was so bad. She was so bad. And one time she took me out, and she had a guy sodomize me with a knife to my throat, and she took the money. This is the kind of things that go on, and it's nothing to these people. They have no, it doesn't matter. This is like part of the life, you know. And he didn't beat her for that. He was upset because she didn't give him the money. So on this one particular trip to Florida, she had arranged this meeting for me with these men who blindfolded me and had a gun to my head and just, you know, did it. So, like, took their turns, like, and you know, if you can imagine, like, you know, you're naked, you're lying on a you know, somebody has a gun to your head, and there's drunk, disgusting, gross men slobbering, spitting on you, you know, saying whatever they want. And I was lucky enough to have them take pictures. So, you know, the things that go on in this subculture, that's that subculture, people really have to understand. I know people don't want to hear it, and it's painful. That particular situation, I think I had a psychotic episode, or some kind of schizophrenic, you know. I had some kind of, there's such a thing as, there's a type of schizophrenia that you get sometimes in a reaction to an event. It's a reaction to an event. It's a reaction to an event, and it will spur a psychosis. You know, where you can't even think of your name. It's hard for me, you know. I would like to explain psychosis to people because I know a lot of people don't know what it is, but it's more like, for me anyway, the experience was like having, if you can imagine, a million different thoughts going through your head and you can't put one, you can't connect one to another. It's horrible. It's worse than extreme anxiety. I've had extreme anxiety. It's similar to that. But this goes way beyond. So anyway, the only thing I could think of and get together after that episode, that I had to talk to my sister because she was the only one who I remembered her phone number. And I called her, and she was in college. And I said, I have to come home. And immediately before I even said I have to come home, she said, where are you? And I said, I don't know. And then she knew. I think she knew right then and there, you know. Oh, my God. She's really messed up. And she talked to me for a while on the phone. She said, I want you to stay on the phone with me. And after we talk a while, I want you to give phone to him. Is he there? And I said, yes. I didn't know. I had no idea she was going to do this. But when I gave the phone to him, he told me when he hung up, he said, she told me I have to bring you home right away or she's going to call the police because she's tracing that call. And he took me home. Kelly, he took me home.
That's
we were in
rare.
Florida. He took me home.
That's a rarity.
Yes. And, you know, but this particular, you know, he had very close ties with the police because I was used as bait because I was young, you know, and he groomed me for that. He groomed me. You know, there's certain times I'm going to tell you to go with certain people. And when those times when I tell you, I want you to remember birthmarks. I want you to remember any kind of scar. I want you to remember, you know, oh, yeah. And that's how he got his police protection. So, you know, it's way more involved than what, you know, it, you know, and hopefully that side of it is getting gone. I don't think it is. Not in this state, but hopefully we can get rid of that because I know there's a lot of good officers out there that are listening to stories like this and they probably cry, some of them, you know. But people have to know it's not just, you know, it number one, it doesn't just have to do with the buying and selling. You know, it goes way deeper, like it did in my situation. It starts at home. It starts at home. You know, it starts with a child like myself being scared to death. When I tell you scared, I was scared to death of my father. To death. You know, yes, I would put on that fake little, you know, when he was in a good mood, I would be in a good mood, and I would feel good, and I would love him, and I would, you know, everything that a father and daughter relationship should be. He would never sexually make a sexual advancement for any of his daughters. Are you kidding me? Oh, my God. No, not him. But that physical abuse is terrifying. I don't think people really know. You know, there's a lot of people out there still spanking their kids. Spanking from a person who has PTSD, I know it can get carried away. And that's one thing, Kelly. I left my kids. I've never put a hand on any of my children. Never. Because of him. It's because of what I watched him go through with that PTSD. And I think, you know, that's how I think of my life. I just think, you know, God made my life this way so that I could experience what he was going through, you know. And I have. You know, I have experienced it. Thank God I didn't deal with mine the way he dealt with his, and I did get professional help. And I was lucky enough and blessed. I feel so blessed that the people that I went to were ethical, you know. They weren't people who were going to tell me what to think, tell me what to do. That all I can honestly say, all they cared about was me and me getting better, me getting over it, me getting through it, me coming out, you know. And when we talk about thriving, you know, thriving isn't always making a lot of money and having everybody know your name and all, you know, that's not thriving. It has nothing to do with it. Thriving is being wealthy inside yourself. And I do feel that. I've felt that for a few years now, and it's nice. And I want people to want to get that for themselves. You know, that's what, you know, I hope that, you know, you can achieve by having this. And you know, Warrior Goddesses is a great group. But just to get back to it all, you know, human trafficking goes way deeper. You know, the subculture itself is really ugly and really bad. But, you know, and then I wanted to spend a little bit of time on after human trafficking. Like my life after human trafficking, I was only in human trafficking for about a year. It went from about October or November of 73 to November of 74, because on the way home from that Florida incident where the gun was put to my head, I was arrested. And that's another story in itself that's created undue stress for me in my field, my job, you know, and as far as fingerprinting goes and stuff like that, because my fingerprints are all screwed up. Because they had me with a fake identification. So when I was arrested in 1974, I was arrested under an alias name that the traffickers gave me. They gave me identification in that name. And it made me look, made it so that I was older because I was only a minor. So my identification made me be older so that they could travel with me, because different states had different ages, you know, that were legally punishable. So anyway, I did wind up, I spent an overnight at the Atlanta County Jail. I was 17. And that comes up on my fingerprints and my real name, who I am. I guess it's because, and this is something really good for other people to know too, and I made a scope on it. I did make a scope on this one time. But, you know, apparently, like, if you enter the fingerprint system at a certain age, or I don't know how it must work, you know, but my fingerprints don't belong to me, according to the FBI. You know, they're not, my name is not on my fingerprints on paper. It's in this alias name that the traffickers gave me. And Elizabeth Cicantelli on my fingerprints is an alias. It's really crazy. So, and this thing that, so therefore, this incident where I was a minor shows on my fingerprint report as me being old enough, you know, not a minor. You understand? It might be hard for some people to understand, but yeah, that's what, that's, you know, another thing about for anybody that has been arrested for human trafficking as a minor who was using identification that the traffickers gave them stating that they were older than what they were. You know, they do that to protect themselves. So, but he came and got me. He came and paid the bail, you know. So apparently everybody knew, you know, who he was, but they just didn't know that I was a minor. So, but when I came back from that incident, I went back to work in the pizzeria where I received compassion for what had happened. And they never asked me to go into detail about anything. You know, people, they were my friends. They were good people. You know, they were good people. They would have never done anything like that. But yet, there are rumors that go around to say, you know, that I was pimped by the mafia. You know, people have a mafia infatuation. Kelly, I don't know what it is, but they do. You know, people are
Yeah, they do.
You know, they're infatuated with the mafia. And, you know, as far as, I mean, you know, and the people that I knew were not even mafia. You know, but they were some of the best people that I ever knew in my life. You know, and did nothing but work. Nothing but work from morning until 11, 12 o'clock at night. You know, work their butts off and not take.
Well, Liz, let me ask you a question because we only have about 14 minutes left.
Okay.
What did you do for your healing process? Because I remember reading in your bio that, let's see.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead. Share a little bit about your healing process, because I think that's important for people to hear is, that there is a way, there is hope after being trafficked or any kind of trauma, that there is that it is possible to go through the healing process. And although we continue to heal throughout our lives can be better and we can thrive. And I love the way that you talked about thriving as not just a monetary thing, but it's that freedom on the inside and thriving through, although we have been through all of this. So like I said, now we're about at 13 minutes. So if you can share a little bit about your healing process.
My healing process actually began because one of my sons had been diagnosed with depression by the school nurse, but the school doctor. And in the process of trying to get him help, I broke down in the middle of the therapy session. And so I had insurance at the time. I was a nurse. And so I got into therapy through trying to help him. And I just, it was just from there on in. I mean, I guess I went to therapy for about 8 years off and on, learning coping skills. Each time something would come up that we would talk about in therapy that happened to me and I would be upset about or depressed, or I never had a problem sleeping. But that's probably because I was more on the depressive side. Learning the coping skills, self-talk, having a structured life helped me so much in the beginning, in the acute stages right after I had experienced some extreme trauma. And if I had known about mindful meditation, I know that that would have helped me a lot during that time when my mind was just so completely scattered, just felt like a shattered, glass. And, the therapy, my therapist, I had an amazing handful of people that helped me within the psychiatric community but they never did get me into groups. Kelly, you're the first, and you're not even a professional. I did have belonged to other Facebook groups before, too, where I met some wonderful people who I hope some are listening now, because I want to thank them. I belong to a group on Facebook. It's called Soul Family, and it's more of a philosophy-type group. But we discuss everything in there. And it's been amazing for me to connect with people on that level, and I would recommend that to anyone who's afraid to go to therapy. Go find a good group on Facebook, a group that's going to make you dig very deep into yourself. Don't be afraid to hear people say things that you don't want to hear, because those are the things that you need to hear. And it depends on how it's done. This particular group that I joined, everyone was so gentle with me. Once I came out and told them the things I had been through, because I really had never come out publicly with anybody, not even my friends, not even my close friends. I never really told them the details. But that group was so instrumental in me being able to become transparent and come on a radio show right now and talk about it and share so that other people can know that, you can do it. Just trust the right people, and that's what they told me in the beginning. Just make sure you trust the right people. And maybe you'll pick a wrong one here and there. Just lay it all off your back. It's okay. It's all right. Because people are going to think what they're going to think anyway. What matters is you. It doesn't matter what they think or what they feel. It's you that matters. You have to do it. You've got to make yourself better. It's hard in the beginning, and I know that. But, just do it. Just pray. If you don't have the courage, pray for the courage if you believe in prayer. or meditate on courage, you know? And, that's how it started. It started with my son. My son had a problem, and then I broke down in the middle of it, and I guess she probably said, well, she needs me more than he does, you know? And she asked me, do you need to come? And I was like, yeah, I do. I really, really do, because at that point my father had passed away, and I felt safe. I felt safe, you know? So if you think your life doesn't fit together, if you think that so much bad stuff has happened to you that you're just broken and used up and nothing is going to help you, and if you can't, you know, like, some people don't like religion. I was lucky enough to have prayer at the time. I was lucky enough to have, you know, a religion. If you can't stomach that, there are other people. It doesn't have to be, you know, through some religion. You know, if you're confused about religion too, you know, and I love that about that Facebook group that I'm in as well. It's not a religious group, but they're very spiritual, and it's really, it's opened my eyes to, you know, a lot of things that I used to be very cut and dry about. You know, I used to be very, you know, oh, if you're not Catholic, well then, you know, sorry, but there's no ticket for you. But I'm not like that anymore. I welcome, you know, anybody from any religion. They're all important. So, my time's probably up. But I know I missed some things, Kelly.
Well, your message was very strong, and what I would like to say is, yes, human trafficking is a major problem in our country, and a lot of people don't want to hear about it, but it is a reality. It is the second largest reported crime in the United States, and it happens everywhere. It happens in the small little country towns to the big cities. And it doesn't matter whether you grew up in suburbia or if you grew up in the hood. It doesn't matter if you are white, black, pink, or purple. There's major demand for every different nationality. It doesn't matter if you are rich or poor. It doesn't matter. What matters to the traffickers is where your what your weakness is, whether it's the low self-esteem, whether it is you're growing up, you may have grown up with no money, and they see that as an opportunity to prey on that. And so that is one of the biggest. Exactly.
Like that one was with, you know, like, he knew that my father beat me, you know. He knew I had a bad relationship, so he tried to be the daddy, you know? He even used to tell me to sit on his lap, and I used to do it because I liked it, because I missed my dad at the time, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, they're they're so manipulative.
They try to find that weakened. Yes, and that's the thing, is the master manipulation that happens. They prey on a weakness. And so that is what this show is all about, is being able to educate the public, educate, and then also bring hope to those that don't feel like they have hope, that have been through this, and a place to connect and know that from survivors. And I think so much, we are more than just survivors. We are warriors. We are fighters. We are thrivers. And that is what I try to get out. That's the message that I like to share. And you have shared an incredible, incredible experience, and how you took everything that you have been through, but you've been able to turn it around. And, you know, I do want to say that in your art, you have been able to take the hurt and the pain and make it into art. And
yeah.
I
that feels
see
so
in,
good.
In, yes,
it
in your artwork.
So good to be able to do that. Yes.
Your artwork is amazing.
I
really
want to share that with women, you know, that, you know, art isn't something that you have or you don't have. You can develop it. You can do it. You can do it. And it feels so good when you've been through trauma to be able to create something that is beautiful in your eyes, even if nobody else likes it. You know, that's been a journey in itself, the whole art thing. So thank you. Thank you for bringing that up.
Yes, your artwork is absolutely amazing, and artwork doesn't necessarily have to only be drawings or paintings. It can be poetry, it can be music, it can be just writing in a journal. It could be whatever it is that is creative. And so, Liz, I want to thank you for taking the time to be on the show this evening. I want to thank all of my listeners for coming on and listening. We go live every Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central Standard Time. If you would like to know more about Empower You, you can visit my website at www.kellyalsobrook.com, and I'll spell that for you. It's spelled KellyalsoBrook. We talk about human trafficking. We also have the shows that are coming up on there, how you can help, and what we are doing in the community to help bring awareness and to help survivors go to heal in their process, in the healing process. Yes. Mm-hmm. And we also have a group on Facebook. If you are a live streamer, if you are on Periscope, if you are on Busker, we have a group called the Warrior Goddesses, and we are just a group of women that that scope on a regular basis. We share about our adversity. We share about what we go through. And so if you're interested in joining, you can find the link on my website at kellyalsobrook.com. So again, Liz, I thank you. To my listeners, I want to thank you so much. Please join in next week. Oh, you're welcome. And I feel so honored whenever, for every guest that we have come on, because it is an honor to me to be able to have women and men that have been through human trafficking or any kind of sexual assault to come on to the show and be able to share their stories, but also share their hope. So until next week, I pray that each and every one of you have an amazing week. Be blessed, and remember to be a blessing to someone else. Good night.